So this is on page 994 of the Church Bibles. But about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. They knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. Therefore keep watch, because you do not know what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time the night thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house been broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at the hour when you're not expecting him. It's the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Thank you. So if you don't know me, my name's Alex, and I'm a second year architecture student here, and that's quite good fun. I would recommend. So this is quite an intense passage, so I'm going to start with a story that will hopefully help us think about it. So last year was my first year in halls, and first year in Liverpool as well. And there came a time about this time last year where my shower was broken. And I know it's a shame, but it wouldn't drain as quickly as the water would come out the top. So as you had a shower, the water level would rise. And that's problematic. But the way I dealt with that was by having shorter showers. What that says about me, I'm not sure. But that doesn't really solve the problem. And it got worse, and that continued for a while. But I didn't really do much about it other than have fairly brief showers. Anyway, there came a time where I knew I had to do something about this. But when you're in halls, you can ask them and they'll come and do things for you, which makes it even worse that I hadn't done that. But I asked them at the reception whether they'd come and fix the shower. And they said, yeah, of course. And at this point, I knew they'd send someone and I trusted in that, but they didn't tell me when they'd come. So the next day, I proceeded as usual and had quite a short shower at this point, but no one came to fix it. And then the same the day after that. And then on maybe the third or the fourth day, someone finally came. A plumber came to fix the shower. But of all the times they could have come, they came while I was in the shower. And I've got a towel around me, so don't worry too much. And all was restored. Now, why this story? Well, I think it helps us think about the passage. So when I asked for a plumber to come and fix the shower, I knew they'd come and I trusted that they'd come, but I didn't know when. I had to trust without knowing all the details. And I think in this passage, we have to do something similar. We have to trust that Jesus will come back, but we're not told when. You with me?
Yeah.
Cool. So let's have a little look at the passage. So at the start of verse 36, we've jumped in the middle of Jesus talking. We're sort of joining him midway through a speech. So I think it'd be helpful if we go back and find what the last person to talk to him said. What was the last person to speak before Jesus? So if you've got one of those Bibles where everything Jesus says is in red, then that'll be really easy. But for the rest of us, if we go back to verse 3, we find who he's talking and what they asked him. So verse 3, which is the page before, says this. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? So Jesus is speaking to his disciples and they're asking him, when will you come back? And then at the start of our passage, what does Jesus say? About that day or hour, about the timing, no one knows. We don't get the details on when Jesus is coming back. So for me, this brings up two questions, and that's what we're going to think about. Firstly, how can we trust in Jesus and trust that he'll come back when we don't know when? And secondly, what does that look like? What does it look like to trust in Jesus even though we don't know when he's coming back? So, how can we trust in Jesus when he doesn't tell us when he's coming back? Well, firstly, he doesn't give us a concise, easy answer to that. But if we have a think about what we do know about Jesus, then that helps us. So what do we know about Jesus? He's always true to his word. And if we look at the passages and the chapters after this, you see lots of examples of that. So in the chapter after or the chapter after that, Jesus tells Peter that he'll deny even knowing him. And a bit later, Peter does that. Jesus tells the disciples he'll be crucified, and then that happens. Jesus tells Judas that he'll betray him, and that happens. So Jesus is always true to his word. So firstly, how can we trust that what Jesus says is true? We can trust because everything else he says is true and happens. Jesus is true to his word. And more than that, in the whole Bible, we see that God is true to his word every time. He's true to Abraham when he gives him a promise. He's true to David, and there's so many examples of that. So how do we trust? Well, we trust because we know God's character and we know that he's true to his word. So when Jesus says he's coming back, we can trust him. One of my lecturers last year came up with a sneaky plan to make sure that we came to the lectures. He told us on the first day that there were 6 tests, and these tests wouldn't be hard, but they'd be in the lecture, but he wouldn't tell us which lectures they were in. So the only way you could make sure you were there is by going to all of them. And we thought that was a bit sneaky and a bit mean, but realistically, he knew more than we did. And he knew that we needed to be there to learn some important things about construction. It was quite dull, but he knew that we needed to be there. And so he knew it wasn't in our interest to know when these tests were, because he knew that if we didn't know, we'd have to come and we'd have to be prepared and we'd learn more. And his lectures were the best attended of the year, so he knew what he was doing. Now, I think there's something similar in this passage again. God knows us, and he knows our hearts, and he knows that we don't need to know when he's coming back. And we don't know what reasons that's for, but we know that if God knew us and knew that we needed to know, he'd have told us. So, how can we trust that Jesus will come back? Well, we can trust because we know that he keeps his promises, and we can trust because we know that if God thought we needed to know, he'd have told us. Good? Cool. So what does it look like to trust Jesus in our lives? So let's have another look at the passage. We're going to have a look at verses 38 and 39. And this gives us an example from the time of Noah of what trusting doesn't look like. So, for in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Now, those things that the people were doing don't seem like bad things. Eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage. They're all things we still do now. So why was that wrong? What if we had a look back at the story of Noah, then in Genesis, God says that every inclination of their thoughts was evil. So in other words, these things they were doing weren't bad things, but they were living totally without God. And that's why what happened to them happened. So if that's a bad example of what trusting in God looks like, what's the opposite of that? Well, if they didn't include God in their lives at all, the opposite is to try and include God in every part of our life. And that's what trusting him looks like. So I'm going to give 2 brief ideas of what that might look like. So firstly, I think that means praying God into every part of our lives. And I'm going to use Ed as an example, because Ed's good. I haven't told him what the example is, but he's good. So Ed's a busy man, and Ed's also an organized man. So he has a diary with everything he does in the day already planned out, which is much more organized than me. But before Ed does any of those things, he prays through his diary. Am I right? He prays through his diary of all the things he's going to do that day, and he gives them to God. And I think that's a really cool example of how he trusts all those things to God. He trusts his whole life, everything that's going on, into God's care before he starts any of those things. So, as a challenge for us, maybe we should try and do that. So, over the next few weeks, I'm going to try and do that when I'm cycling into uni. I think that's a time that will work for me. But that's a first challenge for us, is to try and give everything to God in prayer. Now, The second thought on what trusting God looks like in our lives is to put God first in everything. Now, this is pretty tricky and looks different for different people, but I'll offer a couple of brief thoughts, but you can spend time thinking about this. So for students and for people working and studying and whatever, maybe putting God first looks like prioritizing him when we're close to deadlines or when we have a lot to do, making time to spend with God. Maybe it looks like that. Maybe it looks like other things, but we can spend time thinking about that. So those are my two thoughts on what does it look like to trust God, praying God into every aspect of our lives and putting him first. Jerome, do you want to come up with the rest of the band? I'll pray, and then we're going to carry on worshipping. Lord, thank you that we can trust you when you say you're coming back, and we can trust everything you say, because you're always true to your word. And help us to live our lives trusting in you, putting you first, and committing everything to you in prayer. Amen.